Welcome to Senior Power of Maine.
Hi, I'm Lynn McGregor.
And I'm David Neely, and welcome to Senior Power. Hey, Lynn, do you know what most people on the Senior Power radio program have in common?
Sure, they're either seniors or they work with seniors.
Bingo! How'd you get that for junior partner? That's good.
Excuse me, David, I'm a senior partner.
Oh, speaking of the senior partners, do you know that it's because of our senior partners that Maine has one of the highest volunteer rates in the nation and is considered very generous with its philanthropy, even though it's a relatively lower income state? And on top of that, are most involved in civic organizations. Indeed, it is our senior partners that allow towns and cities throughout the state of Maine to have that community feel.
And we need our seniors to stay in the game.
Lynn, I think we're going to have Mary Barstow, the associate publisher for Maine Seniors Magazine, share a story with us.
Oh, I can't wait. Mary always has the best stories.
Mary, welcome to Senior Power.
Hi, David. Hi, Lynn.
Hello.
Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure.
So the story is about, many times I have tried to help people that have been adopted find their biological parents. And it's nothing I've searched out. They always somehow find me, and it's always a pretty emotional situation. So I'd like to share with you one of the times.
Okay.
This is a story. I had gone to vacation in Florida a couple of years ago, and I heard from my new neighbors, they were actually from Maine that were living right next door to me. So when I heard their names were Maggie and Ron, when I heard they were from Maine, I thought to myself, isn't that funny? That's a coincidence. So shortly after I arrived, Maggie immediately came over and welcomed me, and we spoke about how funny it was that we only lived 35 miles apart in New England. The next morning, she came over to have a cup of coffee with me, and she said, you know, it's funny, we have another coincidence. And I said, oh yeah, what's that? She said, your name is Mary Frances, and she said, my name's Mary Frances too. And I said, oh, that is funny. And she says, I says, so how did you get the name Maggie? Because that was how she introduced herself, was Maggie. And we laughed, and I said, nobody gave me a cool name like Maggie. I stayed with Mary Frances. And she says, oh, that's a story. She said, I just always wanted to be called Maggie. So she said when she was 26 years old, she legally changed her name to Maggie. And she said it was very upsetting to her adopted parents that she did that, but she said, I was so driven to have this name Maggie. And I said, how come? And she says, I don't know, just what I wanted to do was change my name to Maggie. And I asked her at the time, I said, you know, Maggie, did you ever find your biological parents? Now Maggie is around 72 years old here, and she explained that she never did search out her biological parents, because she had such a loving, caring relationship with her adopted parents, who were now passed away. She never wanted to hurt them, she said. So, and Maggie said, I just didn't know how to go about it or what to do. But she said, I was always so curious. I always wanted to find out something, that maybe I had a brother or a sister out in this world or something. So I told her I could help, or at least I could try. And she was excited, and I said to her that we needed to get what they call, David and Lynn, it's called non-identifying information about her adoption. Now, with non-identifying information, it doesn't give you any names or anything. It just tells you maybe you'll discover what nationality her parents were, where they were from, and that kind of thing. And so we sent away for this information. And after several months, it arrived, and I went to work doing my thing. I don't have the answers as to how I find names, but I do. There's nothing logical, scientific about it. I always believe that it's just kind of a God thing. So after many, I mean many, many, many hours of computer searching and phone calls, I found a name that I thought, you know, was a possibility that could be her mother. I had shared with Maggie that her biological mother would be in her high 90s, and like her parents, she probably had passed away years ago. But I suggested that I would still keep trying, and maybe we could locate some siblings if there were any. I was able to confirm that Maggie was born in New York City, which was really puzzling to me because she was adopted in the state of Michigan. I continued to search, and after receiving the non-identifying information, it became so difficult. And at one point, I was really convinced that, you know, the people were so old, it just wasn't working. I just was afraid it was impossible. And during the next few months, I decided to call Maggie and come and visit me. And when she did, I told her one person who might be a first cousin of the woman that I thought to be her mother. Maggie called the man, but he could not confirm the person I thought was her mother ever had a child that she gave up for adoption. So there was no way to confirm it. So during my search for this woman that I had come to believe was Maggie's mom, I kept seeing this one name who had been kind of a caretaker friend to her mom. It's a name that kept coming up with this woman. However, I could not find him either.
Oh.
Then after Maggie visited, I tried calling information all over again. It was unbelievable. The information operator, remember that 411 used to call?
Yes.
the information operator says, I'm sorry, we still don't have that name. And then all of a sudden she says, oh, isn't that strange? It just came up on my board. And I said, oh, my God, give me the number. So I found the number. It was brand new information directory. I called. And a man answered, and I immediately recognized his name as the caretaker of the woman I suspected that was Maggie's mother. I asked him if he knew if this woman, who I thought was her mom, had ever had a child and gave it up for adoption. He immediately said to me, well, what was the child's birthday? I told him it was October 1st, 1944. At that moment, he told me, he said, yes, that would be her. So I was pretty beyond excited. I asked if Miss Hartford, which was the name of her mom, last name was Hartford, ever had other children. He said, no, the girl was her only child. I was beyond disappointed, but asked this man if Maggie could call him so she could ask him some questions about her mother since he had known her. And the man kept saying to me, can Maggie call me? And I said, yeah, can Maggie call you? And he said, it's just making no sense. And he was kind of getting irritated. And I said, I couldn't understand the man's hesitation. I told him that I was not the daughter and that I was calling on behalf of a friend. The man just kept sounding strange. And then he said, I'm not so sure why you're asking me if Maggie can call me. And then he says, asked me, he says, what's your friend's name? I said, Maggie. The man said, oh, I see the confusion here. Maggie is her mother's name, too.
Oh, no.
He asked, why don't you speak with her? She's right here. And I said, what? I said, her mother's alive. I was so shocked. And she was still alive, and she was, you know, really with it and very well.
Oh, my God.
When I told Maggie, I know, can you imagine, her mother was 96 years old.
And still alive.
And she was still alive. And I said, when I told Maggie her mom was still alive, she was the one who was, believe me, very in shock. She immediately called her. And when she first spoke to her mother in a very, she came over and she called her with both of us together, in a very quiet little voice, her mother says, is this Maggie? And Maggie confirmed, of course. The lady responded, my name is Maggie, too. She said, this was a miracle. Within 2 days, Maggie and her husband drove all the way from Michigan, from New England, to visit her birth mother.
Oh.
She was greeted at the door by a nurse who took a huge breath at seeing Maggie, she says, "Oh my word, you look exactly like your mother." And she did. Maggie told me that she went in, she sat next to her mother. They both were so overwhelmed. Maggie said she and her mother held hands, and then her mother got up and went to the drawer and pulled out a box. So she walked over to this dresser, pulled out this dresser drawer at the bottom, she said. In the box was a perfectly kept baby book that was my friend Maggie, and also her baby bracelet, her beanie that she wore on her head when she was born. Her mom said, "I have been keeping these for you for a long time. It took you so long to come home." And she was crying. And then Maggie's mother, was a captain in the Marines. She
wow.
gave birth to Maggie. It was amazing. She gave birth to Maggie and kept her for 8 months. So she really wanted her little girl to have a better life, she told her. She wanted her to have a mother and a father. Every day, she wrote in her baby book that she loved her daughter, Leslie. That's the name
her
biological
name.
Mother had given her. She kept cards. She wrote cards and messages and poetry every single day of her life. Maggie's mother never had any other children. She just waited, she said, for her girl to come home. And she did.
Thank you, Mary, associate publisher of Maine Seniors Magazine, for joining us today.
Medicare is so confusing. I didn't know where to get help, but I wouldn't call a plumber in Arizona to fix my pipes in Maine. So don't call some out-of-state 800 number to navigate Medicare plans when your help is right here at home. The Senior Planning Center represents all Medicare Health and Part D plans. They have trusted professional experts in every county. You should call them for your free Medicare review.
Call 223-6565 today. That's 223-6565.
And welcome, Gary Crocker.
My grandson, Isaac, now he's 13 now, but when he was about 3 years old, maybe four, he came to Maine in the wintertime. Now, he lives in Southern California, so he'd never seen snow. And he come to Maine in the winter, and we had a blizzard while he was here. I took him outside to play in it, lost him three times, but he kept yelling. I found it. Anyway, we went to church while he was here. Tenney Memorial, right in the heart of downtown Augusta, Maine. And during the service, I have to say, Isaac was a little out of line. He kept talking. And, you know, when the pastor's talking, he likes to be the only one talking. And he kept giving Isaac that evil eye that said, you know, And me too. Calm your grandson down. I'm giving a sermon here, and I want everyone to hear it. Well, that went on. We finally got through the sermon. The service ended, and we were leaving. And, of course, the pastor raced up back to shake everybody's hand. And Isaac and I got by the pastor, and there's a big plaque at the back of our church with the names of people from the armed forces engraved in it. It's quite fancy. Brass plaque. Nice and shiny. They had just polished it. Well, Isaac walked over there. He loves shiny things. And he walked over. He's studying that plaque. And the pastor walked over, and he said, "Now, Isaac, what do you think of that?" Isaac said, "Well, what is it there?" Well, the pastor said, "That right there is the names of people in the armed forces that died in the service." "Really?" he said. "Was it the 9 o'clock service or the 10:30 service that they died in?" That didn't impress the pastor at all. And so the pastor kept going. He said, because Isaac had been so mouthy during the service, he said, "Isaac, do you know why it's important to be quiet in church?" And Isaac said, "Yes, I do. It's because people are trying to sleep." Anyway, a fella drove up to Booth Bay Harbor in his Mercedes car. Saw a fisherman, a lobsterman, working on his traps, parked beside the road. Watched the lobsterman a while. Finally got out of his car, walked down. The lobsterman just kept working on his traps. The fellow couldn't help himself. He finally said, "You know, that's quite interesting what you're doing there." And he said, "I'm quite interested in this whole place. I've never been in Maine before." He said, "It's quite a special place, ain't it? Quite attractive. I like the views. I like the ocean. I like the mountains, the streams. There's a lot of good. Maine has a lot to recommend it." And the lobsterman just said, he got mouthy at that point. He goes, "Yeah? Well, the man kept talking. He goes, you know, I've traveled a lot. I've seen a lot of things. I've seen the whole world. I've been in Antarctica. I've been in, before the crowned heads of Europe. I've been all across the European continent. I've been to China. I've been down in South America. I've been everywhere. I've seen everything. I've traveled all over the place. Here I am in Maine. He said to the lobsman, he said, I'm just curious, if you've traveled much at all, being a lobsman. The lobsman looked up at me and said, no, I didn't have to. I was born here.
Ooh, that's a good one, Gary, and thank you for joining us today. Now with the founder of the Senior Planning Center, Anthony Aruda, we're going to hear about why the Senior Planning Center has helped so many Mainers.
To give you an example, it was about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I had a client come in and said, geez, Mr. Aruda, you know, our insurance premium is going up and up, and they were actually on what they call a Medicare supplement that's been around for years, and that's what people had a standard of understanding, a Medicare supplement. And they said, we can't afford this any longer. They were paying in excess of $200 each person. So as we went in, I said, well, yes, there's some programs available now, Medicare Advantage, that you don't have to pay for that premium, but it works from the bottom up, and you would pay copays. So, I mean, he said, yeah, you have additional options. So as we got into it, that was a very plus. But then the woman turned around, and we were saying, I said, by the way, there are assistance programs if you qualify as a senior with low income. And she just immediately commented to me that, oh, by the way, we're on one of those programs. It's called the Quimby program. And I looked at her and I says, well, ma'am, you know, I feel very bad, but I'm going to tell you something. The program that you are on, that Quimby program, pays all of your medical expenses over and above Medicare anyway. So that program you've been paying each of you at $200 apiece was not necessary. You don't even need that. The woman says, what? Now, the sad part of that is for that woman to have qualified, or that family to qualify, their income was less than $2,000 a month. So for over a year, they had been paying $400 a month out of their income of $2,000 a month for this premium, which they did not need. And she turned around and started crying in front of me. She said, you don't know what you've just done. You saved us. We didn't know what we were going to do. And when I mean, this happened, and this does happen frequently. And I looked at this and I said, oh, my God, how many people are out there that this is applying to because they have no idea what might be available for help for them. And this is not welfare. It's something that they deserve because they were on a low-income basis. So the reward that I personally and our entire company gets out of helping these people is tenfold. It's better than any money that we could personally make. But I'm a firm believer of what goes around comes around, because that individual is probably told 15, 20 other people that how much we were able to help them. So there's always a good story that comes out of this. And so when you ask why we get into doing this, we just found out there are so many other avenues that we can just help people. And by doing it, it just increases our business, and it just is a good thing to do.
And, Tony, you save these folks $4,800 a year, and when people are on fixed income, that is a major, major life-changing event, as you pointed out. But I want to go a little bit further. You had mentioned before that sometimes, particularly in rural Maine, they may not have access to some of this information. Well, indeed, in a world where everything's an 800 number and you have to go online, for seniors in rural Maine, going online and doing their own research, and you know as well as I do, even if they do their own research, this information is not easy to distill, and it almost takes a pro.
Well, a lot of it, too, is we are in rural Maine, and many of the services through the state and everything else are in offices just based on their demographics, wherever the office is. And in relating, many of the seniors are just not capable of just going into these offices at any time for appointments or anything like this. And to be honest with you, we find in many, many cases that the senior doesn't like to think they're going to get a handout from anybody. And I like to try to stress to them, this is something that they require. It's something that they should have. The senior should have this benefit. They've worked all their lives, and if there's programs out there that can help them, they should take advantage of them. And it's just a good thing to do. We're in a state which is very rural. I know from Stratton, Maine to Farmington, Maine, where the DHS office is, that's an hour, and many of these people, they're not visiting Farmington. So that's why in our operation, yes, we have offices, but we have agents throughout the entire state that are going to take care of these people no matter where they are.
Thank you so much for joining us today again, Tony Arruda, the founder of the Senior Planning Center. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you very much, David.
We have with us Dr. Len Kay, the director of the Center on Aging for the University of Maine System. You know, Len, you've got other programs at the UMaine Center on Aging, and I didn't want to put you on the spot. It's just that it does seem that you were awarded recently a fairly decent grant to support the Senior Companion Program. I didn't know whether you might want to speak to that a little.
Oh, I'm always happy to, David, thank you for the opportunity to sort of blow our own horn in terms of our Senior Companion Program, which is a federally funded program, but which you'd need to apply for on a regular basis. There's no guarantee that it will be funded and you'll be a sponsor. And the Senior Companion Program is so important, as you may know, because it provides opportunities for older adults with on limited income, living on with limited resources, to collect a stipend and do something wonderful to serve, that is, to serve older adults who are confined to their homes. So these are older volunteers who go into the homes of older adults, usually in their own communities, and provide companionship, a helping hand, a listening ear, and a sense of companionship for folks who otherwise are likely to be at high risk of becoming isolated and lonely.
Very good, Len. Sage Lens, Dr. Len Kay, the director of the Center on Aging, University of Maine, with us, and I really appreciate the great information. We look forward to having you on again.
Always my pleasure to join you, David.
From time to time, I look into the archives of Maine Seniors Magazine, and I pick out some of my favorite articles. One of them is under the column we used to call From the Porch, A Sunset of Fuzzy Peaches by Hunter Howe. And this is the radio version. A Sunset of Fuzzy Peaches. How fast the years pass. Where do they go? I see the past. It seems like yesterday. It reminds me of a good book, one I return to often. The more I do, the more I gain a clearer understanding of what happened. Our memories, retrieved from the mind's storeroom, help sustain us as we plummet through life, as we review our fulfilled dreams and accomplishments. We gain strength from them. Some memories lug pain, like lingering sadness, a form of mental anguish. The past, a lifetime. Goethe wrote, "We look back on life as a thing of broken pieces because our mistakes and failures are always there first for us to be striked with and outweigh in our imagination what we've accomplished. Think about our travel adventures. Upon returning home, we feel a sense of relief. We're safe. Initially, we tend to concentrate on those annoying aspects of the journey, the long lines at the airport, the stress of security checks, the gripping turbulence, the disappointing downpour at a destination. Soon after, we remember what really mattered, the excitement of learning about the new culture, the sensory stew of savory tastes and smells, the hike into the lush valleys and glades, swimming below a beautiful waterfall, the joy of something accomplished. With time comes perspective. Today there's a tendency to overanalyze everything. We find ourselves over-paralyzed in thought, much like a philosopher, searching for meaning, pondering great issues, seeking truth, speculating and intellectualizing, interpreting distant facts, leaving us with too many open questions and half answers. Where have we been? Where are we going? In our adolescence, we embrace the delight from the vivid colors of our crayons in the crayon box. In our senior years, we might feel emotionally frayed by the many shades of gray and veiled shadows. As we age, birthdays fly by. We exclaim, "Oh, it's just another birthday." But down deep harbors the fear of a life pushing the edges of the horizon. I'll admit, I dreaded turning 60. I knew the years would then speed by. Every 3 months a new birthday, or so it seemed. And I'll admit to feeling a little anxious. I wanted my journey to slow down, my life's train to make more frequent stops at junctions along the way. Although I know the ultimate ending, the book on my future, unlike the one on my past, remained unwritten. I couldn't see what happens between now and tomorrow. Time moving forward. No, I can't control my age, and as I'm not a subscriber to the Nip and Tuck Club, I can only control my appearance somewhat. But I can control my attitude. That said, I knew my fast-moving train had indeed reached a critical junction, that this stop, at this moment in time, signaled today. Harriet Beecher Stowe said, "The past, the present, and the future are all really one. They are today. Time marches on, but the clock strikes now. Changes and challenges await with uncertainty." That's certain. I want to live, not survive on my terms. I've decided to take a slow train and enjoy the stops. Today I feel no need to race down a black diamond run, to bungee jump or parachute. I do plan on keeping moving, hiking, kayaking, biking, picking the raspberries, going to church suppers and local fairs, visiting craft breweries and wineries all here in Maine. There's so much to do. And this gives me hope. And the next to health, hope is life's sustenance. Aristotle said, "Hope is a waking dream." I think of an old Maine sailor leaving his safe harbor once again, adjusting his sails, navigating the ebb and flow of his long life, venturing toward the sunset of his future. He carries on. Vera Nazarian wrote, "Sunrise paints the sky with pinks and the sunset with peaches." Again, sunrise paints the sky with pinks and the sunset with peaches. So this is the progression from childhood to old age. As I stand on the pier of today, I peer out at the sunset. I sure hope that the peaches taste good.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Senior Power.